PTF here. Want to remind listeners about this very cool promotion we have for new First Bet customers. Download the First Bet app. And if you're new to First Bet Express Bet, you have the opportunity for a 10% rebate. This is the best offer going, the kind of thing where you should make sure your horse player friends know about it. And if they're eligible, they should get in on this 10% rebate up to $1,000. The code is ITM1000. If you have any issues, feel free to reach out to me personally. We will help get you sorted if it's at all possible. Also, a reminder, free daily racing form past performances are available for the Stronach 5 this week and every week. Go to drf.com/ITM, enter the promo code MONEY, and get your free Stronach 5 PPs, drf.com/ITM. And remember, for that 10% rebate up to $1,000, download the First Bet app. Welcome to the Stronach 5 podcast for Friday, August 21st. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in a location we've recorded many shows, though not that many lately. I'm at the kitchen table on the Little House on the East Side. We're doing something very different for the show. We've got three guests a little bit later to talk about Gulfstream. We've got announcer Pete Aiello. And then, didn't plan it this way, but we do have a little bit of a race caller theme going on as Matt Dinnerman will be joining us for the anchor leg from Golden Gate. But as far as the three Laurel Park races go, this week's analyst is right here with me in person. You know her from her own podcast, Talk Racing to Me, and the fine work she does here on the In the Money Media Network. You may or may not know that she's influential behind the scenes on the Fox Sports broadcast of Naira. You've seen her on the Laurel simulcast. You know who I'm talking about by now. Naomi Tucker, how are you tonight?
Very well, Pete. I feel like this sore thumb sticking out here. I'm not a race caller. What are we doing?
Can you call races? We had one of the most amazing things in these horse player happy hours that we do the other week. I say the other week. It was probably 5 weeks ago now, maybe more. I don't know. I lose track of time up here. But Michelle Yu impromptu called a race that would, with, you know, a lot of race callers, they're great. Let me tell you, if Michelle Yu decided she wanted to become the first full-time race caller in the USA, she could easily do it. Is this a secret dream of yours as well?
I'm afraid it's not, but I'm going to give her a secret away because I knew she was able to do that about 2 years ago.
Do tell.
So she definitely has the talent and has been honing her skills because I was at Santa Anita Park and it must have been 2 years ago now, 2018, I do believe. And we would be sitting there watching the races. Sometimes for fun, she would call the race.
Mm.
And I'm not going to lie, she's incredibly talented. I'm just saying.
So she has practice.
A bit of practice.
Okay. It wasn't as off the cuff as we thought.
I mean, I'd love to believe that, but I know that she's been practicing. And yes, she has a gift. I would love to actually listen to her call.
Yeah, it was good. It was very impressive stuff. We're going to have her next time she's on the show. I did the host fail thing last time. She was on with us last week, but she wasn't in a position to call races. We'll make her do it. We'll keep this thing going. Before we dive into these Laurel races, I just want to talk to you a little bit about your summer. Listeners have been in touch with you. You've been keeping a steady stream of content going on the In the Money Network with Talk Racing to Me. But how's the day job going?
So far, it's going well. Yeah, try to keep everyone updated. I think I used about 6 minutes last week talking about my own life and my own experience here. But, you know, want to share everything that's going on when people aren't able to attend. I want to give them the experience of what it was like to be at the racetrack. And I'm very fortunate that sometimes I'm on the front side standing to these next to these amazing connections, amazing trainers, really, you know, seeing these incredible races unfold, or sometimes I'm on the back side and I love sharing that experience. So no, it's been going well, long days, but I mentioned this to you before. It's an incredible team I get the pleasure to work with.
they are great. I mean, just from what I know from seeing them in the social hours, and the final product obviously speaks for itself. It's racing coverage like we've never seen. You must be excited though, Laurel not too far away, and you're going to have an opportunity to work on a classic not too far down the line in terms of this year's Preakness in your role with the Maryland Jockey Club. What are you thinking about your return to an on-air role down there in Maryland?
Oh, well, if anyone's rooting for Tiz the Lord to win the Derby, it's me. I want him to win the Derby, get to Pimlico, get to the Preakness as a Triple Crown contender in this weird-ass year that will see me make my debut on air for the Preakness in a year that's like none other before. But come on, can we please just, you know, get everything working out together? Like, I don't know what kind of voodoo we're talking about here, but like good vibes. Please, Tiz, go and win the Derby. It makes me very happy. Love to see Gamine turn up the Preakness. Any, you know, Swiss Skydiver, any of the girls, come and bring it. I honestly, I'm encouraging this, but please don't go to the Derby because I need him to win the Derby and then move on. So yeah, no, super, super exciting.
It's very cool. And, you know, you can be honest too, that there's some part of you that's excited for Tiz the Law, not just because of what it would mean for racing and what a great professional opportunity it would be for you, but you really just want to win the Derby draft, don't you?
Yeah, that too. I mean, I feel like I have the best draft of all of them, very humbly stating that.
You're not
I
wrong.
I got the first pick. So I feel like anyone that would have gotten the first pick would have picked Tiz the Law after his performance in Travers. Matt Bernier mentioned it. I mentioned it. I liked him before, but that Travers win made me go some kind of expletive, incredible horse. Like really went from the horse that has been, you know, he just gets on with it, does his job. But that Travers win was an improvement as a three-year-old. It was in terms of his capabilities. He showed us what he can really do and gave me so much confidence going into the Derby. I nearly wanted to tweet out something saying, like, see you at the Preakness after the Derby. And then I got talked out of it.
No, don't do that. Yeah, don't do
because
that.
Because I knew I would probably get crucified. So, guys, yeah, Don't worry. I just would really like him to win the Derby. That's all. I haven't tweeted it out.
Well, we shall see in just a couple of weeks' time. But in the meantime, we've got this Stronic 5 to look at. It's a fun sequence this week, and I'm looking forward to getting another bite at the apple. We had another close call last week. Chaotic result in the last at Golden Gate shut us down. But we are back for more, and, you know, obviously it's a gambler's fallacy to say that we're due. But we're due! I'm ready. I'm getting ready to hit this thing. And with your help, Naomi, and that of Pete and Matt, I think we're going to get it done this week. Things start off in Friday's seventh race at Laurel. Scheduled post time is 3:58. We've got an allowance race on the turf for fillies and mares, three and up, going a mile and a 16th on the turf. I will let you kick this one off. What numbers do you think we should be including in our Stronic 5 this week in this first race at Laurel?
So in typical in-the-money player style, I was looking at sort of dividing the horses that I was interested in A's and B's. And my A's, I included two horses in this race. That was the number 9 One Last Trial and the number 11 Correctness. The number 9 One Last Trial, trained by Kelly Ruby. I thought she was a really strong win last time. I jumped handily enough, sits behind the speed on the rail. Don't think they went that fast. And she managed to run on from a slow average pace. I think that even she's on the outside, I think she'll have, she's not a front runner. She's not going to make the leap, but she has a bit of speed to navigate her way through whatever is going on. I like Julian Pimentel. He knows what he's doing. Kelly Ruby, I have underestimated her before on turf. I'm not planning on doing that today. So she's going to be in my A's here. And then I very much like the number 11 Correctness. And this is funny because this is the other Arno Delacour runner. I am not including the other one as an A horse, including her as a B horse. Find Correctness very, very interesting as an A horse, trying to find a little bit of value here. She's my second choice here. Of course, if you were looking at the PPs, she's a $1 million phasic tip in Saratoga Select yearling. Anyone looking at horses running at Laurel, that is quite a lot of money. Like Laurel, a really good quality horse flesh, but there's not that many $1 million yearlings running around. So you've got to pay attention. And her grand dam is Yell, a grade 2 Devona Day winner, third in the 2010 Kentucky Oaks. Last time out, she ran on the turf. That was her debut on turf. 95 buyer on the turf last time out over a mile. I think that is very decent. If her granddaughter could do anything like that, it would be quite solid here. One of my notes was much more interesting of the two Arnaud Delacour entries. So there you have it. Looking at her last race, I think this is a bit of a similar setup for her. She has a wide draw here. She had a wide draw last time. Short run into the turn. Same thing here. She wasn't as forward last time out at Delaware. But I think she's going to show a little bit more speed here because I don't think there's that much speed in this race. So I think that's going to make it a little bit easier for her to navigate her position. And I definitely find her incredibly interesting. So they're my two A horses, Pete.
I like it. We'll get to the Bs in a minute. I'm with you that correctness is the more interesting, I think, all things considered, of the Delacour runners. And I see you make a good case for one last trial. There are a couple of others I definitely want on tickets here. Basically, my numbers that I was interested in getting somewhere. I hadn't thought too much yet in terms of A's, B's, and C's. We'll do that as the show goes along. But correctness was definitely on the short list. Kambalitsa has to be somewhere for me just because I thought all in all that race last time with a tough post and not the easiest trip and first time against winners. Sometimes horses can improve off that. Kambalitsa for me has to be somewhere. I'm okay with the idea of making a B, though, just because I do prefer correctness more. And one other I definitely want to include somewhere, I wonder if this is one of your Bs, is number four, Sailing to the Wind. I'm a big Brittany Russell fan in general, and I thought this horse could be the clear speed and might just be better on turf, all things considered. So I want those numbers somewhere. If I were to rank them, I'd probably say 11, 4, 8. What do you like at the B level in this seventh race at Laurel?
So I'm wondering if this is a good thing or not that we're actually agreeing, because I had four Sailing to the Wind as a B.
Okay.
And then I had Kambalitsa as a B as well. Both horses I find interesting, not enough to put them as A's. Agree with you wholeheartedly in terms of Brittany Russell. Incredible trainer. She's done so well at Laurel Park. Love seeing her horse. They're always incredibly well turned out. Now, this horse is actually quite funny. So unfortunately, I haven't been at Laurel in the last couple of months. Love going to track work. And I had multiple notes on this filly because I've seen her in the morning. And I remember first time I saw her, I asked, I think it was Sheldon Russell standing next to me going, who's that? Like, I like the way she looked. I thought to myself, this is a turf filly. I like the way she's moving. Then I saw her work, and she worked with another horse called Macklemore Avenue. That wasn't a very good work, so that kind of put me off a little bit, and I was wondering how good is she really, because Macklemore Avenue wasn't that good. According to Brittany, this was me asking, oh, you know what, how did they go? Was that Sailing into the Wind? Because I kind of recognize her. She's a gray filly, so she's easy to recognize in the mornings. But then I was looking back at the races that she ran. She ran very impressive, like she won very impressive last time, but then looking back at that turf race, she outbroke everyone. She was on the speed before dropping back. She battled really hard, and she'd been on the pace most of the way, ended up feigning a little bit, and I'm thinking there isn't that much speed in this race. This could really set up for her, so I definitely find her interesting and absolutely have to include her as a B horse.
Okay, and we'll see, depending on how the ticket shakes out, might want to even upgrade the four Sailing to the Wind as a B. But I think we're in the same universe of horses here. That's a good sign. That'll make the ticket construction portion of the show easier. You mentioned Macklemore Avenue, a 10-strike racing runner, and I just have to give Marshall Graham and Clay Sanders props once again for coming up with an obscure rock and roll reference in a name. Of course, Macklemore Avenue being Booker T and the MGs, covering the Beatles' Abbey Road. Do you have any idea of any of the words I just said and what they mean?
I'm just sitting here laughing, going, I swear she didn't say it was that bad. But, you know, I was like, oh, dear.
No, you were talking in relative terms. Relative, I didn't take it as you burying the horse.
Yeah, no, Macklemore, I do remember some of his songs. So if it's related to that artist, I'm good.
Yeah, different Macklemore. Oh, okay. Different Macklemore.
You know what? Never mind. Okay.
All right, so we're jumping around a little bit. We're now going to go to our Gulfstream Park guest, and we'll be back here in just a few minutes with Naomi. But I'm in this funny position where I'm going to just go ahead and throw it to myself. I am now very pleased to introduce, for the first time, and not the last, on these airwaves, a man that I'm a big fan of. I know a lot of you out there are big fans of, from Gulfstream Park, announcer Pete Aiello. How are you today, my man?
I'm good. Good to talk to you, Pete. Enjoying the Overlay City bandwagon, as I've been calling it for months now. The fact that the Stronic 5 each and every week pays about 10 times more than it should.
Oh, yes.
So if you're looking for value, there's no better bet in the game. And I'm not just shilling. That's the fact.
No, I agree. And it is funny because I like to preface it and say, you know, of course they're, you know, of course we are working for first bet in this endeavor. But we're very happy to do so because exactly what you pointed out, the overlay week to week is amazing. You're competing on a much more level playing field than you are in other bets for a variety of reasons. And it's just fun. It's nice to have this play out, these five races that play out over an hour and a half on a Friday. I love everything about it. We've been having a little bit of a tough time on the show. We have been the kings of four of five. So I decided to break things up a little bit differently this week, and I wanted to bring in some circuit specific experts, if you will. But since this is your first time on the show, I have to indulge my own impulses to ask you a couple of non-Stronic 5 related questions. The first one is about you as a horse player. You are an announcer who I would say calls a race very much like a horse player. In other words, giving gamblers information they want to hear about how their horse is doing at every stage. It's certainly not unique. There are other callers who do this, but I don't think any of them do it with the frequency and aplomb that you do, or none better anyway. Let's put it that way. Where do you think that came from? Is that something that you worked on and developed, or is it something that comes more naturally?
First of all, thank you very much for that, because in my business, there's no better compliment than that, because, you know, as I've said before to some other folks, I'm a fan first, Pete. I mean, that's where I got started in the industry. I don't have any family in the industry. I didn't have a second cousin who worked for this guy, who worked for that guy to help me get into the business. I was a guy who tucked his racing form underneath his arm back when that was still a thing. And I was walking around like I owned the joint by the time I was 15 years old. So, you know, my perspective with anything to do with my contribution to the industry will always be as a fan first. And I think that, you know, as many races as us as horse players watch, you know, a lot of times we'll be able to sniff out the way a race is flowing a little bit better than the next guy. I mean, just asking you anecdotally, how many times have you been in a OTB or a simulcast facility and you have some guys screaming, come on five, come on five. And you just think to yourself, what race is he watching? Of course, he's got no run left.
I don't know. I think it deepens, especially a newer fan's understanding of what's going on to use the voice and the vocabulary to really, really narrate the race in a way that heightens the drama. That's how it comes off. That's how it comes off to me. Where did you get your introduction to the game? I have a feeling your dad may have played a role here.
Yeah, he certainly did. My father was a horse player because my grandfather originally actually was a professional greyhound player, if you can believe it. And he played dogs in the Florida circuit for years and ended up going into the greyhound business after that as a kennel operator. All the while, that was his real job, but he moonlighted as a football coach in the high school sports arena and also as a school administrator. So, but anyway, I'm a third generation horse fan or horse player, and I'm actually a Florida bred. I was born and raised down here, and never in my wildest imagination did I ever think that I would be working at Gulfstream Park. That I can say without hyperbole. It was never something that I thought was attainable. So to be here is a pretty darn cool thing.
I've got to ask how the process went of horse racing going from avocation to vocation.
I'll try to give you the Cliff Note version. I'm sure we could talk for hours about that, but because I didn't have anybody in the industry to connect with, so to speak, I figured that the best way to network and to work into the industry was to go to the University of Arizona's racetrack industry program. So when I was a senior in high school, that's the only college that I applied to. I didn't have any safety net. So fortunately it worked out and I got accepted, and I went as a freshman in college to the University of Arizona and, made some great connections and got introduced to some great people and took advantage of every opportunity that was presented to me, whether I understood that it was a good opportunity or not. I just recognized that, you know, it's an opportunity and I need to go here and I need to go there. And I bounced around. I started on the Arizona County Fair circuit. I got paid an experience, no money changed hands, and went to Finger Lakes for a summer. So that was my foray into New York racing, and ended up in the farthest north paramutual facility in North America, a little track called Evergreen Park. I spent the summer there. And then I went from that to Prairie Meadows in the racing office capacity for a couple of months, only to get the announcer job, and my first paid announcer job, at River Downs in Cincinnati. Yeah, and I've been really, really fortunate. I mean, you know, you want to talk about being in the right place at the right time. I think that literally defines my career from woe to go. You know, some people say I'm being a little too humble when I say that, and that I wouldn't have been in the right place if I didn't have any talent. And I suppose there's some credit, you know, some truth to that statement. But at the same time, I mean, you know, Larry Coleman was gracious enough to give me an opportunity to be his backup in the summertime here. And that parlayed itself into getting taken, you know, notice by Oaklawn Park. And then Oaklawn Park gave me a chance to, you know, to be the voice of Hot Springs. And, you know, at that point, you know, I was in a position where I had year round work and I was in good shape. And, then as it played out, Larry didn't want to come back to Gulfstream or whatever, you know, whatever transpired there. And then I ended up being a year round employee here. So, and that's just one leg of getting very lucky all along the way.
Well, I think it's one of the, you say lucky, and it reminds me of a quote I use all the time on these airwaves. It reminds me of the old adage that the harder you work, the luckier you get. But I do appreciate the role that random chance does still play in these things. Well, that's fantastic stuff. We appreciate the very much capsule overview. Promise we'll have you back on for the long version and get into the stories the next time we have you on the airwaves. It's quite the traveling lifestyle if you want to be involved in this game at almost every level, it seems. There's always going to be a lot of road miles. I suppose that's never truer than for a horse racing announcer. I want to ask you, there was a great clip. You did an interview for Sky Sports Racing. I think it was with my friend and colleague over there, Daryl Williams, and they ended up playing it on one of the little fun packages they pop in there from time to time. And Daryl was asking you about future career ambitions. Speaking of travel, and you mentioned the idea of going to the UK and calling a jumps race. Now, were you just playing to the home crowd there, or is this an actual ambition that you have?
Absolutely not. It is a 100% actual ambition that I have. I really and truly want to go. I was watching races actually from Ireland at Tremor last week before our races started. And that's a place that I think I'm going to have to make a UK and Ireland double, because it almost looked like they were running on a 6-furlong track then. And to do jump racing on an extended trip on a 6-furlong track with a hill that I don't think I could physically get up is a pretty cool thing.
It's amazing. It's a different type of skill you'll see those callers do over there. But it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we know people between Daryl and myself. We know we can make this dream a reality when the time comes. Keep us in mind. I want to see it. We could get some international headlines going when that dream becomes a reality, as so many of your other dreams have tended to do in your career. So this one will be no exception. But for now, we should look ahead to this second leg of the Stronach 5 on Friday. It's race 9 at Gulfstream. 3 and up maiden claimers, 25,000, 1/16 on the turf. Let's start there. What do you think the chances are that this race will take place on the turf? I know today being Thursday, there was some weather in the area. How are you feeling?
To try to be a weatherman in South Florida is a very thankless job. But right now, we had some rain overnight, but right now the sun is out. And on Thursday, even though some of our races are off the turf, our turf is in good enough shape that we are actually going to run on the turf today. So if that takes place, I think I'm supremely confident that we'll have a good chance to stay on the turf tomorrow.
Love it. We'll be optimists. We'll handicap the race for turf only. As ever, if there are changes, I will send updates via my my Twitter feed and hopefully have an opportunity to change the tickets around. But it will, we're going to hope for goodness sake that it's not necessary. What do you like in this race, Pete? Who do you think we need on our Stronach 5 tickets?
Well, you know, Pete, it's a really interesting race because you have horses coming out of $20,000 maidens, and then you have horses coming out of $32,000 maidens, and even a special weight dropper. And I, when I handicapped the race, I struggled to figure out what the delineation was between the horses that were in for 32 that are now, quote, dropping to 25 versus those that were running for 20 and 25 that are, you know, back in the same spot. And I really didn't see a huge distinction between those horses that were running for 32 and the horses that were running for 20. So with that in mind, I think we can kind of handicap the race as though there's, you know, pretty much everybody's running in the same kind of spot. I think the 10 Suleiman's going to take a ton of money. He is 3-1 on the morning line, just speaks to the competitiveness of this race. But he had a ton of trouble. You go from Rios to Zayas, and don't get me wrong, I'm a big Rios fan, but that's going to attract a lot of wagering dollars. Sano is not a guy who gets horses ready first time out, as evident by the fact that this horse was 45-1. So I'm expecting some big-time improvement from the 10 in that race, and I don't think he needs to improve much to have a major say in the outcome. But because I'm not a chalk player by nature, I have to come on this program and give you a horse that will be a big, big price. And he may not run very well, but there's a lot to like, in my opinion, about the number 4 horse, Plenum. Now, this is a horse who did no running of any kind 2 starts ago in his career debut. And then last time, he showed really good speed, and he was actually really keen in the early stages and only got beat 6 lengths. He improved 15 lengths off the freshening and showed a new dimension doing it. Santiago Gonzalez with the return call, and he worked really well going into that race. So I feel like this horse is slowly but surely stepping up. And yeah, I know there's a whole lot of other options in here, but that's the beauty of it. Our turf course, now again, I don't know how the rain's going to impact this, but over the last couple of weeks, speed has been your weapon of choice on our turf course, and this horse showed last time out that he does have a pretty good first gear. So if I was playing a Stronach 5 and I had a single somewhere and I wanted to try to blow the board up, I would make sure I would use the 4 Plenum. If I was just trying to get through the race and try to come up with a competitive ticket, I'd make sure I had the 10 Suleiman.
I love your thoughts on Plenum. And just looking at pace figures, you can make a case that this one will be clear in this spot. And I like everything you're saying. This is one we'll definitely look to include as an A. Suleiman feels like an obvious A. There were 2 others I just wanted to get your opinion on that I was considering as backups if I have the money. Bourbon Rocks, the 9, the first-time starter for Pletcher, and then the 7, South Point Drive. I was curious just to see if you could give me a push in either direction on either of those runners. Let's start with this firster for Pletcher. How do you expect this one's going to run?
Well, I mean, you never know with Todd, but to me, I think that the insinuation is that this horse may there's a reason he's still here. As far as being in South Florida when many of the other Pletchers have moved out of town. There's also a reason he's in for 25 first time out. Now, that being said, you can play that game on both sides of the fence because Todd puts his horses where he expects them to be competitive. So I feel like Bourbon Rocks is an all-or-nothing proposition. And if you're structuring a ticket in, you know, in the ABC category, I'm not so sure you want to have him prominently on your A's, only because he's not a horse. He's either going to win or run way back. There's not going to be any, you know, 3rd or 4th beaten 2 lengths with trouble call on this horse, I don't think. As far as Southport and Drive goes, he is one horse that, you know, he has been laid up since the wintertime and since before the big meet. And looking at his company lines don't impress me. But that being said, you know, he does have races on the go back that are fast enough to be competitive here. But again, that would be a horse that if I'm spreading in the race, I want to use him so he doesn't beat me. But by the same token, I'm not going to hang too many of my hats on the corner of South Point Drive either.
Yeah, that sounds very smart. I'm going to, for now, leave them in his B's. If I need to get cheaper elsewhere in the ticket, I'll end up cutting them off. Another note that I'll make for Stronach 5 players, I feel like both South Point Drive because of the layoff and Bourbon Rocks because of the first-time starter, I feel like the tote board might be indicative of their chances. And you'll be able to see, before this wager has to go in the first Laurel race, you'll be able to see the will pays in the exotics here and also the early win money. That might give a little bit of signal. I feel like, for me, if Bourbon Rocks or South Point Drive weren't catching any money, that might be an indication of a lack of readiness that would make me more confident in leaving them off. But my inclination from here anyway is to include them both as Bs. Well, Pete, obviously we haven't even scratched the surface of things to talk about, but we do have three more legs of the Stronach 5 to get to. So we'll leave it here, but hopefully we'll get a chance to talk again very soon more about your approach to this game and your career.
I look forward to it very much. Thanks for having me on. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Cheers, my man. Okay, PTF, thanks for that. Great getting a chance to talk with Pete Aiello. We're back here at the Little House on the East Side with Naomi to move on to the next race we're meant to be talking about here. We've got two in a row now from Laurel. We've got the 8th and the 9th on Friday. The next one up being this Dirt Allowance going 6 furlongs, restricted to fillies and mares, 3-year-olds and up, Maryland breds. And I made you go first last time, Naomi, but I'm going to make you go first again this time. What do you think we should use on our tickets in this spot?
So this is quite interesting because in general, when I'm looking at 6 furlong races, I know that you and JK have said that quite often before. You don't want a horse to come from that far behind because 6 furlong, there is just not that much ground to sort of make up. Now, I end up on a horse that is typically a little bit more of a closure. She's not that far behind the number 6, Quiet Imagination. JV and Toledo just really think that there will be plenty of speed in this race for her to make her run as a bit more of a closer. I wouldn't say an out-and-out closer. She's not a deep closer. She's going to be there, but she's never going to press the pace. She's not going to make the lead. Not in this field anyway, possibly in any other scenario. But looking at that last rail, she was behind the speed. She drops back. She looks done. And I feel like I have this weakness for horses that look like they're completely out of it, completely done. And then they re-rally and start showing a bit of gutsy hardiness coming back. And that's what she did and ends up winning by a length and a quarter. And I thought, you know what? That's pretty good enough for me to make her an A horse here.
I like Quiet Imagination as well. It is fun when you watch them, you know, find like that. That is great. And I thought, all in all, that was a solid trip and a nice win last time. But absolutely could back it up with a pace scenario that should be A-okay. This is an improving 3-year-old who just makes plenty of sense in this spot. Quiet Imagination, definitely an A for me as well. What else did you have in this one?
So it's quite interesting because I have a few sort of scribbled notes saying possible Bs, but the one B that I ended up for sure was the horse that's actually on the inside, the number 2, Elegant Gal. Didn't like her last one, was muddy, 5.5 furlong. Happy to excuse horses on ground that possibly doesn't suit them. Now, she's only ran 3 times. She's a 4-year-old, so obviously she's needed some time, and I'm quite happy with trainers allowing horses to get some time to develop. Certain horses just need that time to really get into their own. And I mean, we've seen incredible mares over the years, 5-6-year-olds that really get to their peak fitness, so I don't mind that. Looking back, 2 races back, 6 furlong, allowers, non-winners and 1. She was 4 wide, really close the whole time. She has a little speed to sort of navigate, and she wins by 4, and I really think that being on the inside, that can be a positive or a negative. Mm-hmm. I think in her case, it can be a positive because she doesn't have to sit 4 wide. She can use that early speed to sort of get to the front. I do hope she's not going to, you know, be using too much of it, but I don't think it's an out-and-out negative here. So I ended up on her being my B horse. And like I said, there's a couple of B question marks here, so I'm just going to let you...
Yeah, let's write them down. We can write down the B question marks and see where they are. I'll interject in the meantime in case one of the ones that you have as a possible is one of the ones that I have as a possible. I thought Bunting made a lot of sense. Good return to the races last time. Should improve second time off the layoff. That's the number 3 horse. And then number 5, Sarah's Treasure, I thought was a bit of a flow move up last time, close to that early pace, sort of settled back and stayed on. This was a horse I thought might just be rounding into form. So somewhere on the ticket at the A or B level, I was hoping to have the 3 and the 5 as well as the 6. Who were your other possibles?
Actually, I didn't end up on those two. I liked Bunting. I've always liked Bunting, but I feel like she just hasn't been delivering for me as much. Like, I've always kept an eye on her, and this is fun because when you're at Laurel Park, you can start following these horses that you kind of like, and you're hoping that they're going to deliver for you. Sometimes they don't, sometimes they do. Unfortunately, I missed her delivering for me last time out. Well, that second by only, what was it, three quarter lengths? Yeah, 3 quarter lengths. Was on muddy ground, though, and when you look at her speed figures, 71 buyer last time out. That looks really high in comparison to this week. That's a really nice competitive level that you'd be looking for. But if you look at her other speed figures on fast ground, which is what I'm going to be expecting, of course, if it changes, please make notes, guys. If it goes muddy ground, absolutely include bunting. But on the fast ground, I don't feel like she's been progressive enough for me to include her as a B horse, so I didn't. But the horse that I did like in it, I thought was interesting, was actually the other coupled entry for Mike Trombetta, Combat Queen, 1A. Last time out, allowance, first level allowance, she got beaten by a neck. She was under pressure the entire way trying to make the running. So, so game. And yes, in terms of her fix, possibly doesn't stack up as much, and hence that was my B question mark.
Yes, I did look. I'm, you know, any excuse to use a Trombetta runner. For me, typically, I'm a big fan, and I think that's an underrated outfit. But I was a little worried about the figures. But we're gonna leave it in there. We're gonna see what we can do, and when we get to the ticket making part of the show, we'll get it figured out. But I think that's a good overview. Is there another one you wanted to mention in here?
Well, I was just wondering if you looked at Sticking Together, because I feel like she's gonna be shorter priced. Has been off for so long though.
That was my issue.
That's why I didn't want to go with her. But in terms of the level that she's been stakes level 2 year old. So you kind of want to see, is there some improvement, but it's hard to judge.
Well, I'll tell you what we can do with Sticking Together. Sometimes with these layoff runners, this won't help me in terms of like creating the ticket that we're going to put up in the show notes. But we will be able to see the double pool from race 7 to race 8. And if Sticking Together was taking a lot of money, suggesting readiness off that long break, I'd be a lot more interested. This was a horse where I started just looking at speed figures in class and eventually sort of got cool to because of the break, but also not a crazy idea as a B. Anything else in this eighth race at Laurel before we move on to the ninth?
No, I feel like we've kind of covered it all. I just wanted to mention her because I know she's going to take some money just on sheer class level.
Oh, no doubt. It could be the kind of thing where this betting pattern that you see sometimes where that I like to avoid typically, where they start off very cold on the board. The money comes in late, people thinking they're getting value. But a lot of times there's a reason layoff horses and first-time starters aren't bet. So
I'd love to see her have a run under her belt to sort of see where we're at. And then if you look at her two races back, which was arguably her better race, she was closing into a very, very fast pace, which I think would have helped her. So to me, downgrading that performance ever so slightly.
I it makes sense. I don't. Muggsy the handicapping Labrador is causing some kind of trouble. I can edit this. Let me go see what she's doing. All right. What are you doing? How did you get over here? She's gotten herself like stuck. Do you want to go outside? We'll just make a note of the time. Go outside if you want to go outside. She had got. I kept hearing. Not that I'm mentioning all her chain rattling. Maybe I'll leave some of this in for the bit again. But I'll cut it for the main bit. I can't leave the door open. There's too many bugs. I'm going to use this opportunity to go to the washroom. I will be back.
You're fine.
Just let the mic roll.
Oh, you're fine. Hey, Muggsy, what you doing? Huh? Were you causing trouble? Were you causing trouble? You old dog, huh? She's like, hello. I'm like, hey.
Honestly, I was relieved when I found her stuck in the cardboard boxes over there. I thought I was going to find her drinking out of the toilet.
Wow. I wouldn't say that's the best source of hydration. She likes it. I like the drinks we were having. No, she likes that. By all means, Muggsy. It's your show.
Okay, let's move on to race number 9. This will be the leg D in the Stronach 5 on Friday, 5:07 post time. We are looking at Maiden Claimers, 16,000, going a mile on the Laurel turf. Oh, I made you go first the other two. I'll go first on this one. I thought that number 12, Patriotic Punch was a must-use on figures, and I'm expecting a forward trip, I think, has the speed to overcome the outside draw. And then I had two second-time starters I wanted to use, one that I felt much stronger about than the other, but one who might be a crazy price. Celebre, the one I thought was extremely logical, lots of reasons to improve, cozily drawn here, dropping from a maiden special weight. And then I had a goofy idea on number 10, Sister Seville, off that first race. So I just thought that the normal second out improvement in a group that, you know, does not seem to feature a lot of world beaters might just have an opportunity to do something. Not a horse that I need to use. Wasn't bet first out at the maiden claiming level, but I just thought back in here was a little bit interesting. There's so many ways to go in this spot. I could keep naming horses, really. You know, the big one other point I should mention about Sister Seville was having not breaking and still running okay. And, you know, I mean, just to mention the full spread, knowing we might not use them all, Mayan Queen looked interesting based on the trip. And has decent numbers. I just felt like the body of work is better than it looks. An Unstoppable Bell. I mean, this horse sounds a little crazy and certainly not a likely winner, but was just very wide on the turf debut and still ran the best number to date. If we can afford to put in some crazy horses as bees, I would also think about the five. So I'm very spready in here. I'm curious if you have a little more focus than I do, Naomi.
Well, it's really interesting because this is definitely a race that if you want to make cases for some outside horse, you could. But I ended up landing on number 12, Patriotic Punch, Lacey Godet there. No speed in this, in my opinion. So I think that like her moving forward here will help her settle a little bit more. She was trying to go with them fast up front last time out. She had to get taken back a little there by Charlie Marquez. Sort of, you know, that stop-start thing that if I see horses do that, I think, okay, so they can run better than that. Because an even distribution of energy means you're going to run better than, you know, like going, stopping, going,
exactly.
Stopping.
Yep.
And I thought she looked good going into this stretch. She did fade a little bit that last furlong. I thought looking on the figures page, she stands head and shoulders above these and it does set up for her. So absolutely must use for me as well. Then I ended up on the horse that you called, what was it, a 2-2-time starter? And I was like, no, she's ran before in Europe. She's a 4-time starter by the time she starts here. Grey Emotion, the number one celebrity on the inside, Weston Hamilton on board. Lost him out. She was midfield. She actually broke well enough, but it was, you know, quite a big field, 12 runners there. She was on the outside, tried, faded a little bit in the home stretch. To me, she looked a little bit green. So I felt like there will be a fair bit of improvement here. Also, second off the layoff, I think the draw, even though it's on the inside, I was saying that in a way, some horses, I think it suits to be on the outside if they have the speed to move forward. She broke well enough, but I don't think she wants to be forward. So I don't think she would mind being on the inside and just, you know, getting a nice position there. And looking at his stats, maiden special, a huge drop. Two maiden claiming 37% winners, Grey Emotion. I mean, connections I could absolutely not ignore. So for me, in this race, it would be the 1 and the 12 as A's. You can start making cases for other horses as B's, but if you want to do anything here, that's those two horses I would absolutely use.
I'm with you. I mean, that's exact. Really, you know, I presented it in a much flakier way than you did, but I totally agree. And yes, second time starter in the USA, I should have said, no offense to Joseph O'Brien. And
talking about Joseph O'Brien, I mean, come on. Incredible trainer who won, what was it, the Melbourne Cup in like his second, third year of training, whatever it was. I mean, his dad, arguably one of the best turf trainers in the world, he's done incredibly well. So coming from a barn like that to a barn like Grey Emotions, I mean, just on connections alone, I'm like, that's it, shoe in.
They're spotting this horse where it can be successful. You know, that's the thing with these. You have to evaluate a lot of times with these drops. It's a huge drop, but when it just makes sense. I mean, you think about how many stalls Grey Emotion has. If there's one that's not going to be succeeding at the graded stakes level, you drop and you take what you can get, and that's, I think, what's happening here. So Celebre definitely on the tickets along with Patriotic Punch, and then we'll fill in with B's depending on what we can afford, more or less. Well, Naomi, we've got one more race to deal with, but I'm going to let you your work here is done, but it's fantastic getting a chance to catch up with you tonight, and we thank you for your efforts, and we look forward to chatting or to listening to you on Talk Racing to Me this week. What do you have cooking?
I should have some really exciting guest signs up. I got Johnny I, the race caller of the racing scene. Super excited to get him on because he's the one that made me feel welcome when I started out with the New York Racing Association last year. So this is like my second year here, and he's been wonderful. And the opportunity he's now gotten to really show his talent on the big stage, I'm so excited to have a chat with him. Also have Bob Edwards lined up, E5 Racing. Of course, have Rushing Fall running in the Diana on Sunday. Also have, I think it's Valid Point in the Four Star Dave on Saturday. So super excited to just talk through their horses, their family operation, and anything. This sounds really stupid. I just want to talk about positive stuff. We've had so much stuff going on with the pandemic. I just want to see the amazing success stories. I just want to listen to how much it's meant to their family and sort of have like a good time doing so.
I love it. You've got a couple of great stories this week. We always love your energy and having you on all these different shows. We wish you well, and we'll be talking again soon. To wrap things up on this edition of the Stronach 5 Show, we have returning to the In the Money airwaves, my old buddy Matt Dinnerman. Matt, how are you today?
I'm great, Pete. Good to be on with you. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Things are good. Very excited about this weekend of racing and the Stronach 5 in particular. But I want to start off with a general question for you, because Golden Gate is now officially back in action, but it's been kind of unofficially back in action since I think it was around late July, 3 weeks or so now. Explain to the folks who aren't tuned in every day to what's going on in Northern California racing, what's different about this meet and what's been developing out there.
So here's the situation with Golden Gate. Is about 3 weeks ago, we ran a two-week meeting called the Wine Country Racing Meet at Golden Gate Fields, which was essentially Santa Rosa Fair's race dates moving to Golden Gate for the year. Due to COVID-19, a lot of different things, Santa Rosa, Golden Gate teamed up and decided, you know what, it's best for everybody who pretty much runs in Northern California. They're stabled at Golden Gate. Let's just keep them there, run the races there. We don't have to worry about shipping, all that jazz, a bunch of different things. So we ran our Wine Country Racing Meet at Golden Gate. What happened there was, obviously, it was a different meet that we've never run before, but we saw some changes for the 2 weeks, including the wagering formats. We saw $1 traditional pick six. We saw $1 pick threes, $1 trifectas. We didn't see an early pick five with a low 14% takeout wager. Instead, we saw just an early pick four. Once we ended the Wine Country Racing Meet, we came back to our traditional summer meet beginning last week, which we always run every year here at Golden Gate Fields. We're running until early October. October 4th, I believe, is the date on Sunday, October 4th. So a pretty decent-sized meet here for the summer meeting. And we go back to the traditional wagers. So we see that 50-cent early pick five with a low 14% takeout. We see the 50-cent trifectas, 50-cent pick three, the $1 rolling super high five, and also the 20-cent golden pick six jackpot wagers. So turf racing, competitive racing. Sometimes you see some Del Mar horses come up here to run if the trainers feel that they need to get a confidence boost or maybe a little bit of an easier spot. And it's been a fun meeting with good weather, Pete.
That's fun. Always a key and something that we've been pretty fortunate about. I should knock when I say this, at Saratoga here this summer where we had a chance to hang out. God, I think that was last year, but it feels like about 17 years ago, doesn't it?
It really does. And you know, a lot of things have happened over the past year, and we're just hoping for a little bit of more normalcy heading, you know, into the new year 2021, because it doesn't look like it's going to happen in the next few months. But my first time at Saratoga, Pete, and you were a big part of that, learning about all sorts of stuff, getting to chat with you, meet you in person. And it's a special place, isn't it, Saratoga?
Oh, it's great. Even without fans this summer, there's still a vibrant community of people who love racing, and in our own safe, socially distanced ways, we've been able to organize a bunch of little get-togethers. In fact, if anybody's listening in the area, we're going to do a little after the races party over at Walt and Whitman Brewing on Sunday night after the races. If you're a listener, if you're in the area, come on by. It's a small donation, gets you, you know, pizza, beer, and racing. It's all the good things in life. But Matt, I want to dive in and talk about this last race of the Stronach 5. Hopefully we can set up a weekend of pizza eating and beer drinking with a nice score in the Stronach 5 and Golden Gate, I've been up and down with Golden Gate's appearances in the Stronach Five. We've had some nice successes, but it's always a place where I love the idea of getting some institutional knowledge, some local knowledge. And I know you know this colony of horses and riders and trainers so well. The second race is the one. It's going to go approximately 5:20 Eastern time. We've got 3 and up maiden claimers, 20,000, going 1 16th on the turf. What do you think we need to do to get paid in this week's Stronach Five?
You know, this race is a very competitive race to end the Stronach Five this week. I made a case for 8 of the 10 runners in this race on the turf course. I would spread a little bit in this race. I don't think there's anybody you can really key in on or trust to win this. There are plenty of horses that have had experience, but there are a couple of horses trying things new and a couple of horses that are moving here and racing here at Golden Gate for the first time. Looking at the race, I think there's a decent amount of pace in it. Cape Point number 7, I'd imagine, is going to be close to the pace. And number 6, Just Like Fred, who's getting back to routing, dropping class. He's routed before, and both times he routed, he went to the lead. So I'm imagining we're going to have 2 horses in there that'll set a decent tempo. I don't think either of them is going to get an easy lead. So I'm looking for a horse maybe coming from off the pace a little bit. I landed on number 4, Jason Colorado. He's 3-1 on the morning line, a very well-bred son of Tappet. Believe it or not, here's a fun fact for you, Pete. The dam of this gelding, Anaba's Creation, well, if you look back in history, she lost by a narrow head to Zenyatta in the 2009 Clement Hurst.
Of course, so, I remember the race, yes. I didn't connect the dots there. That's funny, though.
I looked at the pedigree. I said, you know, this dam's name rings a bell here. Let me check this out. Sure enough, there you go. But her baby, obviously things haven't really panned out for him with that good breeding you'd imagine early on. They thought highly of the horse, or at the very least thought that this horse would be able to do something nice in his racing career. He started out his career with Todd Pletcher. I just look at this horse and say, you know what? He's probably coming from off the pace. He's dropping in class. First start for the Jack Steiner barn, who's a very good trainer, Pete. For those who don't know Jack, he's got a very efficient stable, probably 20 to 30 horses every year, and he consistently wins at 15-20% every year. He knows how to get horses ready off of layoffs. This horse is coming off a layoff. We haven't seen him since November. But his 2 and 4 back efforts, they win this race, and they beat this field. And like I said, Jack's a good trainer. He's probably going to have this horse ready to go. And Evan Roman rides. A lot of people know Evan. He won the 2017 Eclipse Award for an apprentice jockey a few years ago. He is making a move to Golden Gate. He's here now. Apparently, he's here to stay, and it looks like he's got some live mounts to kick off his Golden Gate career here this week. So we're going with Jason Colorado, but he is not a cinch by any means. I made a long shot case for number 3, Hula King, second start routing. He's got a lot of opportunities to maybe run a little bit better. Hasn't been able to do that, but now he's getting to routing. And the thing I like about this, second time routing, I like anytime a horse does something for the second time. And this horse, on top of that, he has a lot of route turf pedigree by Tom's Tribute out of a Singspiel mare. So even him, a long shot at 15-1. I made a case for a lot of these horses, and I'm going to spread a little bit here.
I like the sound of it. A couple that I was thinking about using, I wouldn't mind your opinion if I'm on the right track potentially, but Quay's Viper is a horse who I thought made a lot of sense potentially against this group, maybe rounding into form a little bit. And then I also thought that Island Heat might be worth using. I wanted one of the horses who was going to be up in the vanguard. I agree with what you were saying about the 6 and the 7 likely setting the pace. I was wondering if just on trip alone, Island Heat could be included. Do you like either of those in terms of potential backups here?
Absolutely. And on the XBTV Stronach 5 ticket, speaking with our producers over there, I said, you know what, we probably want to spread in this race a little bit. And one of them, Island Heat, is on the ticket adding blinkers. I don't think Quasi Viper made the cut, but he was one that if he didn't make the cut, he was right there. He was probably the 5th pick in the 4 that we used. Island Heat adding blinkers. This horse has plenty of turf pedigree, being by Unusual Heat. I know the connections liked him early on. Things haven't really panned out for him. He's another one, like we talked about that last horse there, Hula King, second time routing, and he adds blinkers for Bill Delia, Catalina Martinez. a very strong jockey trainer combination. But one thing that will be interesting with him is to see what kind of tactics he employs, because he stocked the pace, wasn't too far off last time. And like I said, there's a lot of speed. And today, adding blinkers, I wonder with Catalina, who's a pretty aggressive rider, if maybe he is up on the pace with Cape Point and just like Fred. So he's another pace possibility, but he's a horse that, like you said, appears to be rounding into form, second time routing, and maybe that's going to help him a little bit. Quasi Viper, sort of a similar situation here. Here's a horse that seems to be getting better form. The thing with him, though, is that two starts ago, first time routing, he ran very, very poorly. Came back and really improved at a big price last time out. He's 6-1 on the morning line. He's a horse that's probably going to be sitting off the pace and coming with one run. I think he might get a little bit of a better setup just in terms of pace scenario than Island Heat is, which is a good sign for you, Pete, because he's probably going to go off at a little bit of a higher price.
That would be fantastic as far as I'm concerned. One last question for you about this race. So let's assume Island Heat does go with the six, sure, just like Fred and Cape Point. What does your gut tell you about who will, forget who's going to win the race, who do you think is going to win the pace battle between those three as the real running starts to turn when they, as you're calling them, when they turn for home?
I think just like Fred's probably the quickest horse out of all the three, and he's a horse that's been close to the pace in sprints in the past, so I'd imagine he'd have sort of that tactical sprint speed to put himself on the lead. And I'll tell you this, just like Fred's a horse that in his two career route races, he hit the board against Calbred Maine Specialty Company here at Golden Gate. And those horses that you find at that level are a little bit tougher than the Maine 20s here. Note this too. It's very important, Pete, that people realize this too. Maine 20 here at Golden Gate Fields is not bottom bet barrel maiden claimers like we see at Del Mar, Saratoga. This is a higher end maiden claimer for these horses here in the Bay Area. So a lot of these horses dropping from Calbred Maine Special Weight to this $20,000 condition, it's not as steep of a drop as you'll see down south. So it's not something that anybody really has to strongly worry about.
Very, very interesting point there. The other thing about the just like Fred that must be addressed is the turf. Now, just looking at Ultimate Eagle stats, turf seems completely plausible. I don't know anything about the dam side of the pedigree. I know, you know more about this Calbred breeding than I do. Do you think just like Fred might take to the green? Because this is one I think I might want to include as a B off that speed of the speed angle. That's such a great point about showing speed against better. Even if it's not the bottom, it's clearly not as going to be as good as the maiden special weight in terms of class. I'm getting intrigued by this one, but I want to hear your thoughts on the breeding for grass.
So here's the thing with this horse here. Obviously, Ultimate Eagle, for those who remember him, he was at his best routing, but he was pretty versatile just in terms of surfaces. He won on the turf. He won on the dirt. Very versatile horse. His dam, just like Fred's dam, named Addiction Ends Here. This mare was a very lightly raced mare. I looked up the pedigree. She only won once, and she only competed in dirt sprints. So obviously her only career win came in a dirt sprint. This is her first full. This horse ran well on synthetic, and he ran well on synthetic most of his races. Usually synthetic form transfers to turf.
Sure.
So I usually give those horses the benefit of the doubt. Now, it's really a case-by-case basis. There is some generalization of, you know what, if you can run well on Tapita, don't worry about it. They can run well on turf. Not always the case. Sometimes you see synthetic specialist horses that really prefer synthetic over turf. So you have to be careful. You don't want to fall into that trap. But at the end of the day, you can't overthink it. You probably want to give this horse the benefit of the doubt. Being by Ultimate Eagle, who could route on the turf, that alone says to me, you know what, he's probably going to be fine on the grass. And the fact that he's run well on Tapita, again, all these things indicate I'm not too concerned about the surface. So if this horse loses, I don't think it's going to be because of the surface.
All right. Great stuff, Matt. Thank you so much for your time here. And we look forward to getting to talk to you at more length soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Pete. Love to be a part of it anytime.
Okay. The guests are gone and it's time to make the donuts. I have input all of the different horses into DRF Formulator, and
we've got some work to do, because we, as you might have guessed from the number of horses we talked about on the show today, we're very expensive. We're right now, to do every horse we discussed with and playing an A with 2B ticket, we would be up to $1,200. We're not going to spend that much. So we're going to do two things. We're going to trim some of the backups I feel we don't need. There was that Trombetta entry in the eighth at Laurel that I thought was too slow. Let's take that one out. There was in the final Laurel race, I had mentioned, oh, let's use the 3 and the 5 if we can afford them. We'll take those out as backups. That gets us down to 764, you know, which is obviously still over the budget we've usually been playing. Not crazy if you're a big bank Hank out there listening. I mean, I still like these tickets a lot. But I'm going to unclick the A's with 2 B's in DRF Formulator. And I think that's going to bring us down to something a lot more reasonable in terms of overall bank. That's going to be a $348 ticket. I am willing to foot that bill. So just to recap, leg A, we're going to do the 9 and the 11 as A's, the 4 and the 8 is B's. Leg B, we're going to do the 4 and the 10 as A's, the 7 and 9 is B's. Leg C, one of our two super spready legs, 3, 5, 6 is A's, 2, 7 is B's. The fourth leg, I should say leg D, 112 are the A's. I am going to use my cheeky 10 as a backup there just for value. And then in leg E, 4, 6, and 9 as A's, 3 and 5 as B's. When you run it through DRF Ticketmaker, it's going to come to $348. Playing everything for the dollar minimum. I'll put the tickets up in the show notes as well, as I typically do, and we'll update for late scratches and changes. Hopefully, where they're going to cooperate a little bit this week. That's it. That's the time we have. We want to thank our partners in the show over at FirstBet/ExpressBet/Stronach Group, especially Steve Cook for all of his support. Naomi Tucker, a pleasure getting to hang out with her in person and going over the Laurel form. Pete Aiello, we got to get him back on soon. Same could be said of Matt Dinnerman. Great contributions from him as well. Love getting that institutional knowledge on these tracks. Thanks, though, most of all, as ever, to you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do, for supporting us at the In the Money Media Network, and supporting this bet, which we truly believe is the best bet in racing. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your Stronach 5 photos. ETF here. Want to remind listeners about this very cool promotion we have for new First Bet customers. Download the First Bet app. And if you're new to First Bet Express Bet, you have the opportunity for a 10% rebate. This is the best offer going, the kind of thing where you should make sure your horse player friends know about it. And if they're eligible, they should get in on this 10% rebate up to $1,000. The code is ITM1000. If you have any issues, feel free to reach out to me personally. We will help get you sorted if it's at all possible. Also, a reminder, free daily racing form past performances are available for the Stronach 5 this week and every week. Go to drf.com/ITM, enter the promo code MONEY, and get your free Stronach 5 PPs, drf.com/ITM. And remember, for that 10% rebate up to $1,000, download the First Bet app.